All right, let's look into the safe havens more with Michael Rubin, resident scholar at the American Enterprise Institute. Michael, good morning, sir. How are you today?
Pretty good. Good morning to you guys.
Morning.
When we're talking about a safe haven as it surrounds Syria, how indeed would that work, sir?
Well, there's a precedent for this, because if you remember, in 1991, after Operation Desert Storm, Saddam Hussein started attacking both the Shiites in the south of Iraq and the Kurds in the north of Iraq, and to stem a flow of millions of Kurdish refugees into Turkey, the international community in Turkey created something called Operation Provide Comfort. It became the safe haven in northern Iraq. The philosophy was you sort of create a no-fly zone over the 20-mile zone around the border, for example, and the refugees can sit there. The international community would be safe to enter without visas or anything, to set up tents, to provide food, and so forth. And this really became the precedent for what is today Iraqi Kurdistan. The important thing is it not only provides a safe haven for refugees, but it also provides a safe space for the opposition to organize.
All right. Now, this then would be within, hypothetically speaking, the borders of Syria here. But what is to prevent right now, when we've got Syria attacking its own people, a bombardment of such a haven?
In theory, nothing would. But then again, there is nothing that would prevent a bombardment with regard to Iraq. Mm. Ultimately, if you're going to have a safe haven, the fundamental question is whether Allied aircraft, American aircraft, Turkish aircraft, and so forth, would be willing to fire on Syrian helicopters or Syrian armor that would try to invade this area.
Gotcha.
Ultimately, without a doubt, they would try. The question is whether they would try more than once.
All right.
Yeah, Michael, it seems like there's the rub. There's been reluctance on the part, at least of the Obama administration, to try to attempt any kind of military intervention, that's not the way we want to go. However, to establish this safe haven, that's a given. You've got to have some kind of firepower to enforce this safe zone.
And the important thing to remember is, back in 1991 with the Clinton administration, I'm sorry, with the George H.W. Bush administration, the logic for using military force wasn't to protect the refugees per se, but rather the Americans, the French, the British, and the Turks who were assisting them.
So what action ultimately, Michael, should be taken in Syria? What direction do we go? As obviously the violence is escalating.
The violence is escalating, but it can actually get a lot worse. One item which a lot of people are not talking about is Bashar al-Assad's known reserves of chemical weapons. The international community needs to start asking itself, what happens if the president of Syria decides that artillery bombardment isn't enough, if he tries to use chemical weapons against his own people in some of these rebel-held or contested cities, what would happen then? But ultimately, there's a very simple decision. Either the Americans and NATO will get involved or we will not. The cost of not getting involved is watching on television and on YouTube as Bashar al-Assad massacres his own people.
Yeah, I mean, chemical, biological, you know, and it would be chemical before biological. But I would think that if that would be the case and he would resort to that type of violence against his own people, America standing by, the West standing by would be unacceptable in many people's minds, sir.
Absolutely correct. And the other thing to keep in mind is we may be standing by, but other countries are not.
Mm-hmm.
The Russians have a naval base in Tartus, which is a Syrian port on the Mediterranean Sea. They recently have just had a port call with a supply ship also going to Tartus. And just this past week, the Iranians sent both a destroyer and a supply ship to Syria. And that those ships left today and are heading back to Iran. But the question remains, if the Russians and the Iranians are supplying Bashar al-Assad, is anyone supplying the opposition?
And would the international community then put the pressure on Russia to be the first one to step up and do something, which doesn't seem like they would be willing to do, obviously?
No, it seems that Russia would probably not do anything, and the reason is simple. Unlike Libya, Russia has, as I said, a naval base in Syria. It's Russia's only naval base in the Mediterranean, and the Russians are afraid of losing it should there be regime change inside Syria.
All right, Michael Rubin, we will continue to check back in with you, sir, as this Syrian crisis continues to unfold. Indeed, as you and Dana pointing out, it seems to be increasing in speed right now. Again, resident scholar at the American Enterprise Institute, Michael Rubin, thank you for being with us this morning, sir. We appreciate
it. Thanks, John. Thanks, Dana.